Sai Ram, and welcome to all our listeners for yet another segment of Afternoon Satsang. And on this pleasant afternoon, I must say it is really a very pleasant afternoon with a slight drizzle going on almost throughout the day. It comes as a very welcome relief after quite a hot and dry summer. So on this very pleasant and lovely afternoon, I am in a very pleasant mood, and along with me is also Prem from Team Radio Sai in a very pleasant mood, and we hope that we will be able to transmit this mood to one and all with a very interesting topic that we decided to have as part of our global satsang today. Welcome, and Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind, and I join you in welcoming all our listeners and offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Yes, indeed, it's a very pleasant day, and it's a very interesting topic too. Because it's a topic which I think every devotee lives through, literally.
Correct.
And there is no escape.
Exactly. I mean, knowing is one thing, but experiencing is totally another ballgame altogether. You know, seeing the topic.
Yes, I think the topic we've chosen is the difference between knowing faith and having faith.
Exactly, Prem. Before we talk about, you know, knowing faith and having faith, I think if we discuss something about knowing and having, that in itself, I'm reminded, you know, during our college days, when I was doing my bachelor's in chemistry, we had something called the cation analysis,
right,
where, you know, you have to find out what is the cation or the positive ion in a particular salt.
Right.
And one of the tests there was the flame test. In the flame test, they would say that different ions, whether it's a zinc ion or a calcium ion, different ions give a different kind of flame when you burn them, when you keep them in the flame. Now, theoretically, you know, from the book I had read and I had studied, you know, something is supposed to give a green flame, something is supposed to give a blue flame,
right,
something is supposed to give a greenish blue flame, and something is supposed to give a yellowish flame. You know, all this I knew. If you just ask me, what cation is it if it gives a greenish flame, I could tell the answer. Now I cannot, but in those days I could. If you ask me what cation gives a bluish flame, I would be able to tell it. But I still remember the first time when I was doing the practicals, when actually I was working with those salts, and I had my theory very sound. At the tip of my fingers and the tip of my tongue, the answers were there. But then, when I actually burned that salt, I indeed got a flame. But now, I was unable to decide whether it was actually a greenish flame, or a bluish flame, or a greenish blue flame. Mm-hmm. How do you distinguish between the three? Because I felt that if I viewed it in one perspective, I could term it as blue. I could term something as green. I could term it also as greenish blue. Now, though I knew what the answer is if it's a bluish flame, I had no way of determining whether it's bluish.
Right.
And that was when I sought the help of my teacher. And when he told me that this is such and such, this is greenish, this is a greenish flame, and therefore it is this cation, that practical experience is actually what made me realize and understand better. We may be very sound in our theory, and therefore when it comes to faith also, I feel we may know everything there is to be known about faith, but having faith is a totally different ball game altogether, because that can come only through experience.
And right, even in this process of learning what faith is, I think it's very similar to what you go through even in elementary mathematics.
Hmm.
You know, addition, you're supposed to add. First you're given only two entities to add.
Okay.
And then slowly you're taught about adding two or three entities together.
Hmm.
And then adding decimals together, adding fractions together.
Hmm.
So I think in every stage what happens, especially when you learn, you always think that that's all is there to be learnt. You know, I don't know whether you felt it, but almost in every section of mathematics, I used to feel that what more is there in maths?
Yeah, we have learned everything.
Yeah,
okay.
After I learned addition, I thought that's all maths is about. And then when subtraction was, you know, introduced, I said, oh, yeah, I mean, I didn't think about this, but that's all there has to be learned about. And then you were introduced
multiplication. Division.
Then I said, wow, that's nice. But again, that's all is, I think that's what education itself does to you. When you slowly, your understanding is opened up. And I guess that's what happens to us even in this path of learning faith.
Hmm.
You're given faith, And you are overjoyed by it. You know that the moment you know Swami and you know that Swami takes care of everything, that faith actually brightens your life.
In fact, you go about telling everyone also, have faith. That is the best thing to have.
Right. In fact, we do that. We go around telling people that, when Swami is there, why do we have to worry? But the real proof of the pudding comes when you are put in a similar situation.
When you are meant to eat, when you almost eat your own words.
And exactly as you said it, it's not a way of testing what you are, testing your understanding, but it's a way, that's the best way you will actually learn. Right? It's not a test or it's not a way where you are being rated, but that's the best way to learn.
But though it is not that we are being rated and it's the best way to learn, we often feel that, God is testing me, we are being rated, being judged, I'm either a winner or a loser. It reminds me of one beautiful episode that, I think we must have narrated it many times in different perspectives.
Right.
Because this episode has so many different angles to it. It so happened that during the 2007 Atirudra Mahayagnam, after the success of the Atirudra Mahayagnam in 2006 in Prashanthi Nilayam, Swami blessed the conducting of the Atirudra Mahayagnam in Chennai also.
Right.
In the city of Chennai. And that in itself is beautiful because I remember how, it was said that when Swami had visited Chennai, he saw long lines of people waiting for water. And that time he actually, in his kind of innocence, he asked, what is this about, Then they were told, Swami, they're all waiting to take water. And Swami felt that in a city of, that time it was Madras, in the city of Madras, when there are such huge buildings on one side, there are people struggling for water here. Swami said that, I shall not come into Madras again until I give water to these people.
Right.
And so this Atirudram Mahayagnam, though that was the main, so-called main event, it is so significant because that time when as Swami stepped into Chennai, Chennai had been supplied water completely by the Sri Sathya Sai Drinking Water Supply Project.
Yes, I remember that. I think the last visit before that was in 97 or 98.
Hmm.
That's when Swami said I would not step
exactly.
in.
And after that, even for God, I think that is how entangled Indian politics is. Even God had such a problem in trying to get this canal through. But even in a place like Indian politics, the Lord's will always comes triumphant, if that's the message we can take from that, because after a decade, Swami did it and he kept his word. He entered, stepped into Chennai only after providing water to all the people of Chennai. Well, that's another story altogether. But here, Swami had taken along with him a few students who would be speaking before Swami's discourse. Naturally, they had scheduled Swami's discourse for each day of the Yagnam, just as it happened in Prashanthi Nilayam. They were replicating the same Yagnam there. So there were speakers who were supposed to speak before Swami. And among them were the students. And this classmate of mine got a chance to travel along with Swami, a great privilege. And he was a speaker slated to speak in Hindi because he was very good in Hindi. Now, one day before his talk, Swami was at the dining session and the day's proceedings had just concluded and it was the dinner time and all the boys had assembled and Swami just, asked this boy, so tomorrow you're the speaker, what are you speaking about? He said, Swami, I'm going to speak about Guru. Swami asked him, who is Guru? He said, Swami, Guru is made up of two words, Gu and Ru. So, Gukaro Gunatita, Rukaro Rupa Varchita. He just, almost parroted Swami's words. These are words that Swami himself has said in several Guru Purnima discourses.
Right.
And meaning,
One who dispels darkness and one who transcends form.
Yeah, that is Rupa Varchita. Gunatita is one who is beyond attributes.
Right.
Yeah, so.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Gunatita and Rupa. So, when he told this, Swami said, Kani naak rupam unde, but I have got a form. So, and my form has attributes. So therefore, who is your guru? I'm sorry, yeah, before this Swami asked me, who is your guru then? He said, Swami, you're my guru. And then Swami said this, but I have got a form, naak rupam unde. Then this boy was, trapped. He said, Swami, I don't know all that. You're my guru, that's all. That's all I know. He just said like that. Then Swami said, see, boys have only theoretical knowledge. But so many doubts they still have. This is what we were talking about in faith also. You know, knowing about faith is one thing, having faith is totally another thing. Theoretical knowledge is one thing, practical knowledge is totally different. So Swami said, if you have any doubts, you ask. This is a beautiful opportunity to get your spiritual doubts clarified. So this boy happened to be right in front of Swami, so he said, Swami, what is Sharanagati? He asked, Sharanagati or surrender. Swami looked at him and told him, you tell me, what is Sharanagati? What do you think is Sharanagati?
Mm-hmm.
So this boy thought for a while and he said, Swami, I think Sharanagati means offering our everything to the Lord. Surrendering. Surrender is that, giving up everything to the Lord. Swami said, sir, God does not want anything from you. Then Swami went on to explain. And he explained in a manner that only Swami can, only he can. You know, he said, have you driven a car? So this boy, who has a driver's license, he said, yes, Swami. Swami said, how do you drive a car? Swami, steering wheel, accelerator, brake, clutch, gears. Oh, how many gears are there? So Swami, it depends, but yeah, definitely there are 4 gears for going forward and 1 reverse gear. How do you put gears? He was wondering whether there was a motor driving school or some training school. So he in fact showed Swami. Swami, first gear you put it front like this, second gear you pull it back like this, third gear you put front, fourth gear you put back. Swami said, yes. Front, back. That's how you have gears. Swami said, life too has its gear. The car of life has its gears. Just as he said, front, back, Swami said, happiness, sadness. These are the gears.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, the car runs fine in first gear. It runs fine in the second gear. It runs fine in the third gear also. The only problem comes when you shift between the gears. The car is not able to run properly. That time what do? So this boy answered, Swami, we use the clutch. Swami said, in life also there's a clutch. And that clutch is surrender. And then Swami explained, he said, to surrender means to tell yourself and have conviction that whatever happens, idi na manchi kosame, which means this is for my good.
Right.
And Swami told that in Telugu. So Swami said, when you shift from, when we are happy, we have no problem. When we are sad also, but from sadness when we go to happiness, we, you know, go beyond cloud 9 and we are out of control. And when from happiness we are brought down to sorrow, we get depressed and go to abysmal depths. So that is where Swami said we should use the clutch of idi na manchiko, this is good for me. This is good for me. So from a sad situation when we go to a happy situation, don't think that it's something about your greatness or your glory. It is good for you and therefore God has made it happen to you. Same way when from a top position you fall down, don't think that what is going wrong, why is this terrible thing happening to me. Just have the conviction, this is good for me, so God is making it. So in this way you will have equanimity. And then Swami looked at him and asked, understood? Yes, Swami, he was bowled over and who will not be? This was such a magnificent exposition on surrender. So he was also thrilled, everybody was thrilled. The next day, this boy gave his talk in Hindi. And it was a resounding success. If you were to judge it by the decibel level of the applause, well, it was a thumping success. He received great applause and he was also very happy. And he was looking at, you know, Swami, hoping to see that pride in Swami's eyes. Every student cherishes that, you know, when he can make Swami proud of him. But Swami gave no response. That night during dinner session, Swami asked one of the elders there, how did this boy speak? He said, Swami, you spoke very well, Swami, what is it? It was almost like Swami speaking through him, so it was... Swami cut that elder curtly in middle of his what he was saying. He said, no, it was not good. Swami said, it was not at all nice. He spoke whatever he wanted. There was, you know, and Swami... Now this boy, when he's sitting there having his dinner, he suddenly felt, what is this happening? He felt very sad because he felt all my thing was to make Swami happy, but Swami is not happy, so what is the use? And then Swami said, see, yesterday I told him so clean, neatly about Sharanagati, but he did not speak about it at all. Now when this boy heard the statement, he revolted. Internally he revolted. He said, Swami, I never told you I'm going to speak about Sharanagati. I told you I'm going to speak about Guru. So this is wrong. You are accusing me wrongly. And now with sadness came anger also. In fact, he stopped eating also. He just didn't feel like eating. He felt so sad and he felt angry. But Swami, this is not right. In middle, you know, Swami finished his dinner quickly and began to take rounds. In between where the students were having food, Swami came to this boy. Swami looked at him and said, "Not eating?" He just made a face as if to say that, "Swami, I'm fine, I'm full now." And Swami looked at him and said, "What happened to surrender, sir? What happened to your Sharanagati?" And in an instant, this boy realized, oh my God, what is this? You know, just yesterday Swami has told me that whatever happens, whether you get praise or blame or order, just keep thinking it's good for me and be equanimous. That is true Sharanagati. And here I am. The next day itself, how blatantly I have forgotten the whole thing. He instantly got up from his chair, fell on his knees, went to Swami and said, "Swami, tappai poindi, shaminchandi. Swami, I have made a mistake, please forgive me." Swami said, "Yes." And then Swami told him, "You spoke very well." This time, you know, the boy had grown wise. He did not get elated. He just smiled and said, "Swami, it's all your grace." Swami said, "Have your dinner." He went and had dinner. And then when he narrated this episode to us, he said, "See, that is how subtle it is. How subtle we forget. In such subtle manner we forget. Just yesterday Swami had told me to be equanimous and take everything for my good is Sharanagati. And he asked me also, have you understood?" And I said, "Yes, Swami, I understood." But the next day when it came to practice, I failed so miserably. And even to this day, he looks back at that episode and remembers. So, you know, knowing about faith and having faith really is so different and it is so subtle. In such subtle ways, we give up upon our faith.
Really, no, just as you were saying, one of the most beautiful analogies that Swami gives about faith, you know, is that of hammering a nail into the wall.
Okay.
You know, in Christian religion, it's a very, very famous statement which says that faith is a gift. It is given. You know, contrary to the belief that you have faith or you develop faith.
Okay.
It said faith is a gift which is given. So given that, you know, Swami says that, let us say that you hammer a nail into the wall. When you hammer a nail, what is the idea of hammering a nail? It's so that the nail gets stuck in the wall. You know, it goes deep into the hole.
So that it can support something.
Right. But the same action after doing which, you know, you put the nail inside, then you try to pull it out. Swami says you shake it and you try to pull it out.
Okay. Yeah, just to see if it is.
Right. Swami says if you're going to nail it to put it inside, then why are you trying to pull it out? Swami says you do that so that you make sure that it is firm inside. If it is not firm inside, you hammer it further. And once you're sure that it is firm, then you hang a picture on it. So if you look at it, you know, gift is a faith which is given to you. So God who gives that faith to you also shakes it. You know, so that you will know whether that faith is firmly implanted in you or not. If it is not, what has to be done to make it firm in you has to be done. And you know, I think all these incidents are there. You know, Swami gives the faith. Swami gives you the experience to strengthen the faith. And then gives you a test so that you know whether your faith is perfectly firm or not. So that you, it gives you an opportunity to reconfirm or, you know, do what is necessary to strengthen that faith.
I definitely agree to that, Prem, because anytime such incidents have happened, the time that you suffer the most is when you're actually going through that episode. But after the incident, invariably, by 99, 100% of the time, you always look back at that episode. And, you know, for example, that student that I told the story about, the experience about, today he looks back at that experience during Atirudra Mahayagnam with great fondness in his heart. And he is filled with gratitude to Swami for having given him that chance. But when he was going through it, it was really difficult. And I feel this is not something new that Swami is doing. Take the avatars from the times, whether it is Rama or Krishna or anybody. Every time there have been incidents where the Lord has granted the faith and has given the devotee an opportunity later on to check on the faith and see how he has failed or passed so that he can build on the faith, right?
That's, in fact, you know, is one very famous story in Bhagavatam. You would have heard how the king Kaushika becomes Vishwamitra.
Okay.
You know that story, right? Because Vishwamitra, King Kaushika is actually a little jealous of Vasishta. He wants to become a
Sage Vasishtha.
Brahmarishi. Yeah, Sage Vasishtha. So he gives up his kingdom and takes up all kind of austerities.
Well, for our listeners who might not be aware of this terminology, sages are called rishis in India. And there's a kind of gradation of these sages based on their spiritual attainments.
Right.
The highest being a Brahmarishi. A Brahmarishi is supposed to be the greatest sage, or we can say maybe he's just almost God in human form. And so there is Rajarishi, there are different rishis.
Right.
So Vasishtha was a Brahmarishi.
Brahmarishi, and Vishwamitra wanted to become a Brahmarishi. But in spite of all his spiritual efforts, he was only given the title of a Rajarishi. Because he was a king who became a rishi.
Okay.
But you know, he was not satisfied with that. And then he goes on to do tremendous austerities. In fact, Vishwamitra gave the Gayatri Mantra to the world.
Oh.
That's why he was called, you know, the friend of all rishis.
Oh, Vishwamitra.
Vishwamitra.
Friend of the world. The
friend of the world.
Hmm.
So, you know, you know the story of how he falls for Menaka.
Hmm.
You know, a divine damsel, and then fathers a child of Menaka. And then after that, you know, he gets so disgusted with himself. He says, I'm on the pursuit of becoming a Brahmarishi, and I've fallen for this.
Hmm.
So what happens, actually, Indra sends Menaka, fearing that this man might become a great sage and he might threaten Indra's post.
You know, Indra, the king of Devas.
King of Devas.
This, mythology.
This very often happens in mythology. You know, Indra is supposed to be the king of all the gods. So anytime a human being does tremendous penance, he feels threatened that, you know, his place might be in stake. So he tries to do away with that person's penance, sends rain, sends fire or whatever, or sends some damsels. So that's what he does. He sends Menaka and he gets Vishwamitra back into the family life and all that. So then Vishwamitra again shuns that life, again pursues his penance. Then I think Urvasi is sent to him. So this time what he does is, he's on guard, he curses Urvasi and sends her off. And then he realizes that he's lost his temper. Like, you know, just like how kama is a thing which has to be overcome.
Just as desire is something to be overcome.
Right. So this time he's fallen prey to
anger
or krodha. Then again he goes back into his penance, and then finally he becomes a Brahmarishi. So there is a, you know, conversation between Lord Shiva and Narada, where Narada says, why did you test Vishwamitra like this? Okay, then Narada says, Shiva says that I did not test Vishwamitra. Being a king, being a kshatriya, these were two predominant qualities in him. Desire and anger. I just gave him an opportunity to remove these things. So what the world sees as a test were actually opportunities given to that sincere yearning in that individual.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's no question of somebody failing in the test of God, or somebody, you know, losing in a duel with God. Everything is only an opportunity so that we can try again and build on what we've lost.
You know, talking about faith and how through the ages God has given opportunities, I'm reminded of one very famous episode, which Swami keeps narrating in the discourses many times as an exemplar of faith. You know, he speaks about Arjuna, the warrior, and how one day during a stroll in the garden with Lord Krishna, Krishna suddenly points to the skies and he says, now look, Arjuna, there flies an eagle. Arjuna doesn't even turn to the skies. He just looks at Krishna and he says, yes, Lord, it's an eagle that's flying there. But then Krishna says, but just wait a minute, is it an eagle? You know, I think it's a dove that is flying there. What do you think? Again, Arjuna does not even look at the skies. He just says, yes, my Lord, I'm sorry, it's a dove that is flying there. Then Krishna says, hey, no, wait. Now that I can see it clearly, I think it's a crow. What do you think? Isn't it not a crow? Then Arjuna says, yes, Lord, it's a crow. Yes, Krishna, it's a crow. Now Krishna looks at him and tells Arjuna, don't you have your own common sense? Don't you have your brain? Don't you have your eyes? You're simply blindly agreeing to whatever I'm saying. What do you think? What do you think that it is? Then Arjuna replies, he says, Lord, I rather trust your word than my own eyes. Because I know the power inherent in your word, that even if my eyes tell me, even if what I see, what I feel, what I think is contrary to what you say, if I feel that what you're telling is utter wrong or nonsensical, even then that is what has come true, because your word is truth. So therefore, Lord, I need not even look up. Whatever you say it is that. And Swami often quotes this example as exemplary faith.
But that's the beautiful thing, no? I think that's why Swami quotes examples like Arjuna.
Hmm.
Because the same Arjuna actually falters later in the story of Mahabharata. But this Arjuna who would not even claim that the bird he's seeing is of one particular type.
Hmm.
That was his surrender. Imagine the same Arjuna at the end of the battle. The whole thing happens and the Kauravas are defeated.
Hmm.
And when Arjuna is supposed to retire to his camp, the general thing is like, you know, the charioteer gets down.
Okay.
And then asks the person who's riding the chariot to come down.
Hmm.
But Krishna sitting there, he tells Arjuna that you alight first, then I'll come down.
Hmm.
Then Arjuna says, no, that's not the procedure. You being the charioteer, you should come down first.
Okay.
So then there's a little bit of battle and Krishna says, no, you listen to me and you get down. And tells it very firmly. So Arjuna, you know, doesn't have a choice. The moment Arjuna comes down, and then when Krishna comes off the chariot bursts into flames.
Why? Why was
that? And then Krishna says that almost many of those missiles which were aimed at Arjuna, Krishna took upon himself. And you know, it was all waiting to burst in the chariot. If Krishna had got down from the chariot first, it would have gone up in flames and Arjuna would have been killed.
Hmm.
So he was literally keeping them at bay till he got down from the chariot. So imagine the same Arjuna who said that if it's a crow, it's a crow, if it's a dove, it's a dove. But here he was arguing which is the right procedure to follow.
Hmm. Indeed, Prem. So, I mean, I think that should actually motivate us and inspire us, because if a person as accomplished, as skillful and as spiritually advanced, if I may use that term, as Arjuna could falter, I mean, it's nothing like a stamp of failure or defeat on us when we falter. But just as Arjuna used those opportunities, we should also consider these not as failures but as opportunities to identify and rectify and grow stronger in our faith. Well, it's about 1 o'clock in our studios now, and we shall definitely continue discussing this very wonderful and subtle topic after this little break.
That's beating loud. There's a hungry heart that's crying out. People all around us are in some kind of pain. What is it that they're being so scared about? Don't they trust in God who's up above? He's always there for us at any given time or place. 'Cause you have to trust in God, and you must not for a second. 'Cause you have to trust in God, and you must not for a second not have faith in Him. There's healing after pain, 'cause there is sunshine after rain. Through Him you will find your way out. Shine after rain, through Him you'll find peace of mind.
that's beating loud. There's a hungry heart that's crying out. People all around us are in some kind of pain. What is it that they've been so scared about? Don't they trust in God who's up above? He's always there for us at any given time or place. Cause you have to trust in God, and you must not forsake Him. Cause you have to trust in God, and you must not forsake Him. There's faith in Him that can move mountains and fall seas. Then will He not provide and take good care at all times? Just faith in Him that can move mountains and fall seas. Then will He not provide and take good care at all times?
Well, that was a very nice song, Prem. I mean, what a nice blend of the East and the West, the chords of the West and the beats of the East. Wow, really beautiful. Well sung by famous playback singer Kunal Ganjawala. Well, Prem, before the break, you know, we were talking about how Arjuna, the great warrior, himself faltered when it came to having faith. And we narrated that story about how Swami saw... Arjuna saw each bird, he saw the bird as whatever bird that Krishna saw. That triggered off another memory in me, a memory of one wonderful tri session. You remember, Prem, those beautiful tri sessions that Vrindavan was famous for? They would say that the amount of grace and love that students receive for 2 months during various tri sessions when Swami is in Vrindavan is equivalent to all the love and grace that all the other students receive for 10 months in Prashanthi Nilayam.
But absolutely. I think that was the only time when we could go and literally spend 2 hours with Swami.
In Swami's home.
In Swami's residence itself. Because otherwise, in Prashanthi Nilayam, we would be seated there. Definitely, Swami used to spend a lot of time moving about and sitting in the portico. But there used to be a little bit of formality in Swami's, the way Swami used to carry himself.
In Prashanthi Nilayam. In fact, you know, the devotees who would have come to Vrindavan would have surely noticed one apparent anomaly. In Prashanthi Nilayam, always when the students enter the hall, the first places to be occupied are the front rows and those rows that are closest to, you know, where Swami's chair is. But in Vrindavan, the first few students who come into the hall will not sit closest to the stage where Swami's chair is. They will sit farthest away.
Farthest.
Because when Swami calls for tri session, that will be the first line that will be let into the tri grounds and then into tri Vrindavan, which is Swami's residence as well. And therefore, a person who is not aware of this would have really thought of this as something very crazy, because a student who is coming first in the line will be coming running and rushing to sit, occupy the last few places, because when it came to tri session, it was always, you know, LIFO, last in, first out. The last line that is there will be the first line to exit. And therefore, I mean, that gives a idea about how how much, you know, a student loved to be in the thick of action when it came to a tri session, that he was ready to sacrifice the chance of sitting close during bhajans to Swami's chair and Swami himself.
And because the first boy in that line gets to replace the footstool.
In Tri Vrindavan, yes.
And Swami's jula, the first thing they would do is go and push that stool under the jula so that Swami never gets it.
And Swami would keep his feet on
right. The
laps of those privileged students who would be sitting in the front. And then a few students would get the chance to rock the jula. And even during that session, Prem, I know I'm taking a detour here, but I think we should relish a few of those moments. It would be so different. There have been many instances where Swami has made speakers speak in his presence. But in Tri session, it would be so different because people who had never spoken before or people whom Swami would not have the guts of making them speak in public, such people also would get chances to speak in Swami's presence. And I also remember once, you know, speaking about it, not only speakers, even singers. I remember one Tri session when all the singers from Prashant and Ilyam, you know, during the vacation, because Swami was in Vrindavan, they had come to Vrindavan to have darshan and then return back to their duties in Prashant and Ilyam. So when we got the Tri session, Swami came and said, today we will have a song session. You know, I personally was very thrilled because all our legendary heroes, the legendary singers whom we look up to, all had arrived from Prashant and Ilyam, and this was the perfect day to have a Tri session dedicated only to songs. You know, where Swami, we could see Swami and hear these beautiful songs. So I'm sure all the other students also would have got excited like me. But then Swami began to call out the list of singers, and I do not want to name those people, but he started with people who have absolutely no idea how to sing. And that Tri session was indeed a fully musical session, but instead of listening to music, maybe I can say that we had to face the music, because everybody who sang was an absolute non-singer who even did not have an idea of pitch or rhythm. And it was almost like a comedy, but those people really enjoyed it because nowhere else they could have ever dreamt of having a chance to sing out to their Lord. And all of us also enjoyed because, you know, the songs were so awry. Swami too heartily enjoyed. I mean, this kind of session, where else could we have had?
You know, even as you're saying, even talking about the speeches and all, there used to be a live audit. You know, you're standing there. That's why, dear listeners, many times when we narrate an incident, we say that this was narrated in Swami's presence in Tri Vrindavan. Because there, the chance of you narrating something which was factually wrong was impossible. Because the moment you start speaking, Swami will say, that didn't happen. Hey, this is not right. He did not say that. I did not tell this. Immediately, Swami would just stop because the singer would be, Swami could pat and tell him to stop. That's the distance the speaker used to have while narrating. We would just be standing beside Swami and speaking. So, you know, even as the speaker would be speaking, Swami would be cracking jokes here. The speaker will not understand why people are giggling because Swami would have told something here. No, really wonderful.
And also I remember when you said about the speakers, the kind of interaction that would go on. I remember one speaker, you know, when Swami indicated to him that after him, there was a teacher speaking, and Swami indicated to this speaker that after he speaks, next you speak. So as this person was preparing his talk, the speaker there was speaking about Mukam Karoti Vachalam, which means the grace of the Lord can make even a dumb man speak. And it goes on, Pangum Langayate Girim, that a lame man can climb a mountain. Swami looked at him and gently told him, you know, told him, opposite ka cheppu, means speak the opposite. So he was wondering what Swami was telling about, and instantly it struck him. I remember it was such a memorable speech. You know what he spoke about, Prem? He spoke about how the grace of the Lord can make even the eloquent people dumbstruck. And that was exactly opposite of what the previous speaker had spoken. The previous speaker had spoken how he can make the dumb speak, and here he was speaking about how grace of Lord can make even the eloquent people dumbstruck. You know, it was so beautiful, and so many memories from Tri. So yes, coming back to the topic proper, if I may say so, that was one Tri session when, you know, Swami happened to start talking about the Mahabharata and Krishna.
Okay.
Now, before this, I must confess that every time, you know, when Swami narrated the story of Arjuna and Krishna, of this dove, eagle and crow, the thought that would arise in my mind is, you know, what's so great about Arjuna in that? That's what I would have done, that's what you would have done, right? I mean, if Swami tells you this is this, you believe that, that's it. I mean, so I felt, what is so great in Arjuna? I mean, it's the same, I also would have done that. And this used to be a thought that had solidified into a feeling in me, into a conviction inside me. I felt that there's nothing special about Arjuna, just that Swami chooses to talk about him. And so this day, you know, Swami was speaking about very interesting things. You know, Swami was asking a student, who is the hero in the Mahabharata? He said, Swami, Krishna. Swami said, not Dharmaja, not Yudhishthira, the eldest, who is the eldest among the Pandavas, who is considered as the embodiment of Dharma. He is also a hero, right? Then he said, Swami, one is a hero at the worldly level, one is at the divine level. Swami said, oh, so there are two levels in the Mahabharata, is it? This person had no answer to say. Then Swami said, what about Krishna? You know, he did so many actions. Some things he did wrong, right? Swami said. Like, you know, that Ashwatthama, when he, you know, I won't go into that story now, but if we read the Mahabharata, we'll come across many instances where Krishna apparently seems to, you know, have slightly gone into grey areas to get victory.
Advantage.
Yes. So Swami said, so Krishna kabhi kabhi galti kiya nahi? In Hindi, Swami said, he did some mistakes, right? This boy, you know, he just said, Swami, I think whatever Krishna did is right only, Swami, he said. No, noting that hesitation in his voice, Swami said, whatever Krishna did, sab sahi, everything right. He said, everything is right. Whatever Krishna says, that is truth. And then, you know, to highlight the fact that whatever Krishna says is the truth, Swami narrated the story of that bird, you know, that, you know, whatever bird Krishna says. And even as Swami started that, once Krishna and Arjuna were going for a walk in the garden, stroll in the garden, I reduced my attention span because I felt attention level. I felt, this is a story that I know. You know, they see a bird and this is a story that I've heard 100 times, I know. And yeah, again, he'll praise Arjuna. What's so great about Arjuna? That's what was my thought. Surprisingly, you know, Swami changed the narrative in a very shocking fashion. He said that Krishna told Arjuna, Arjuna, look up there. There's a gurram, horse in the sky. And this was atrocious, you know, a horse in the sky. I mean, I was thinking that Swami wanted to elongate the story. So if you want to elongate the story, use some other birds, you know, tell a kite was there or tell a peacock was there or something like that. And here was Swami telling that Krishna told Arjuna, there's a horse in the sky. And I saw that I was not the only person disturbed in the audience. There was quite a few others thinking, hey, how can a horse fly in the sky? But then, you know, Swami continued as if like nothing had happened. So he continued and then he said, Arjuna said, it seems that, yes, Krishna, it is indeed a horse. Then Swami continues and he says, Krishna tells, but no, Arjuna, I don't think it's a horse. Just see, I think it's a lion. At this point, I said, oh my God, Swami, what are you? We are making a complete hash of the story. Okay, and then Arjuna looks up and says, yes, Krishna, it is indeed a lion. Then I was thinking, Swami, come back to birds at least. You know, shift back to birds. Birds fly, animals don't fly. And then Swami said, Krishna said that, no, Arjuna, I think it's an eagle. I heaved a sigh of relief. He came back to birds. And then he went to eagle, crow and, you know, the same dove. The three birds that he uses always. I just felt if you wanted to prolong the story, use two more birds. Why use animals? And this is exactly how I have noted down the happenings of that day in my diary. It was recently when I was going through my diary, I got a slap on my face. You know, here was I thinking at that time that what is so great about Arjuna? And in that exact and I felt that if I was in that situation, I would have done the same thing what Arjuna did, that is agree to Krishna. But here was Swami giving me a chance to be in the exact same situation of Arjuna, where the Lord is telling something apparently atrocious, but even without looking, not thinking of what the eyes can see, the ears can hear, or what the mind can think, blindly agreeing because you know that the Lord's word is the truth. And when I got the opportunity, I miserably failed. You know, when Swami was narrating that Krishna said it's a lion and Arjuna said, yes, my Lord, it's a lion. Me who thought that I am as great as Arjuna in my faith was telling Swami, Swami, come on, lions don't fly, shift to birds. What are you doing? You're making a hash of the story. And that is when I realized that, you know, it's so easy to be a platform hero, as Swami calls it, you know, but when it comes to practicality, that is when, the, as you say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. I realized how subtly, though I feel that I have faith, Swami has gifted me faith and I'm so thrilled by it, when it came to practical, I failed there. I mean, I look at it and feel that this is another learning opportunity to realize how, when you say blind faith, it is not that you're blind to logic, because it, what the Lord is saying is illogical. You're blind to logic because you know that the Lord's word is the truth and it can materialize the minute He mentions it.
Right, exactly. You know, it's like that same thing. You have different levels of faith. You know, I can have faith within these conditions. You know, when it becomes too much for the reason to accept, then my faith gets shaken.
Just like you said, mathematics. You feel that this is what faith is all about. And suddenly subtraction, I said, oh, okay, this is also faith.
So then every time you just have to include what happens in your understanding of this one.
Mm.
In fact, you know, one incident when I remember is, one of the students after his education, when he stayed back, when he was studying, Swami had told him that you stay back here, I'll give you a job. But then after he stayed back, nothing was forthcoming from Swami. So once in an interaction, he told Swami that, Swami, I'm here because you asked me to stay. And Swami said, oh, are you here only because I told you to stay? So he said, yes, Swami, because you have told me to stay, I'm staying here. Then Swami said, okay, I'm telling you then now. You go back home.
Okay.
You know, he was so shaken back by that, because Swami said, yeah, I gave you a word, I'm taking it back now. I'm telling you to go. So he was not ready to accept that, because, you know, though he had faith that Swami will do whatever he has promised that he will do, he was trying to frame Swami with that promise which Swami had given. And that's why Swami said, you know, faith and surrender is so inseparable, that we think, you know, you can bind Swami by the word which He has given, which is not true. That is where ultimate faith actually will result in ultimate surrender.
This is very profound point that you have made, Prem, because there have been so many, I mean, why to blame anybody else? We ourselves, you know, how many times has not the question arisen in our mind, you know, regarding the Mahasamadhi, saying, how can Swami leave? He said he'll be till 96, how can he go? I mean, questioning and faith, I think at the end, the culmination of questioning, when you've got your answers, that is what is faith.
Actually, you know, there's a very beautiful episode which happens in the life of Radha, when Krishna is leaving for Mathura, you know, when that period as a cowherd boy in Gokulam and Vrindavan is over, and he's proceeding towards Mathura. All the Gopikas know that he's not going to return, you know, how much ever he promises that he will. They know that once he goes, he'll become a prince and he'll never come back to be their Krishna. So everybody is pleading with him and they're trying to persuade him to stay back. You know, trying to tell all kinds of things that Kamsa is very cruel and all those things. But the fact is they want him to stay back. Then they realize that Radha, who is most close to Krishna, was not part of that group which is pleading with Krishna to stay back. So they search for her and they find that she is in that very same place where she spent, you know, in the banks of Yamuna, where she would spend time with Krishna. She's seated there all alone. So some of them rush to her, trying to gain her support. They tell, why don't you come and tell Krishna to stop? Because if you say, he'll definitely stop.
Like, okay, yeah.
They know that the bond between Radha and Krishna, and they say, if you say, don't go.
No, I was just reminded that how it happens here also, you know. There used to be some student with whom Swami would speak to on a regular basis for his own reasons. And we used to call them as form boys. So, if suppose we have to ask, Swami, can our class come for morning darshan? Or can our class put up a drama in front of you? We would always try to prod these boys into asking, because we used to feel that if these boys ask, Swami cannot refuse. He can refuse us, but he can't refuse these boys. I just thought that maybe the Gopikas too felt the same about Radha.
But, right, you know, that's maybe what the Gopikas thought about Radha, but Radha was what she is because of what she said.
Ooh.
You know, she looked at the Yamuna, she looked at, there were puddles of water, you know, in the banks of Yamuna. And she said, see, look at all these puddles of water. In every puddle, the moon is reflected. And just because the moon reflects in this puddle, can this puddle say that the moon belongs to me? He said, it's just that the puddle is pure, so the moon is reflecting on it. So he said, we all belong to Krishna. Krishna does not belong to us. We have to accept whatever he chooses to do. We have no claim on him. And he says, if he chooses to go, then we have to accept it.
And, you know, Prem, as a continuation of this thought, again, what a beautiful paradox it is that the minute Radha accepts, you know, not that she did not accept before, but when Radha has accepted that Krishna does not belong to me, that is when Krishna comes and tells Radha, I belong to you. He gives up the flute and he's always one with Radha. That is what, so even though, you know, Krishna is wedded to so many other wives, I mean, there are so many, but still, when anybody speaks about Radhe Krishna, Krishna Radhe, that is something that is brought up as an example of true, pure, divine love.
In fact, you know, one of the most beautiful description of this event is what K. Munshi wrote in his book, Krishna Avatar. You know, wonderful, it's really inspired writing, though he says that it's fictional, that's what he says in the introduction, but he says, what I see Krishna as, I feel this is what would have happened. And I'm sure there was a lot of fact in what he wrote, because Swami went to him in, you know, the later years and showered so much love on him. You know, he writes about that incident that after Radha says that I will not call Krishna back, whatever he does, he does. Krishna comes back to Radha and he says, you tell me to stay, I'll stay. You know, that's what he says. I'll give you two choices. You tell me to stay, I'll stay, or you come with me. You know, I'll take you to Mathura. So, you know, Radha tells Krishna that you can never remove yourself away from me. Because the aspect of yourself which you've given me will always be mine. That'll never go. And he says, but if I come with you now, that Krishna whom I fell in love with will no more be there. Because you will be Prince Krishna.
Correct.
So, in the pursuit of me trying to hold on to what I have now, I will actually lose what I have.
Wow.
But if I'm here, I can still have, and nobody can take that away from me. And that's what she proved till the end of her life. Right? You know, Swami narrates in that poem which Swami wrote, when Krishna comes back after so many years, Radha is not even surprised to see Krishna. Because contrary to belief, she has always lived with Krishna all those years when she was away from Krishna.
Krishna had become a part of her.
Right.
Oh, that's a really, I mean, inspiring example, and I think that is an example that we should all try to emulate, because that is what will give us solace. You know, how much ever, let's, you know, even if we take it practically, what will our complaints ever fetch us? Swami, why did you leave? We are not coming back. What, Swami? We thought you'll come back. Whatever, Swami, you said, you know, we are literally doing that. We're pointing out, in this discourse you said for this many years, in that you said this, so therefore how? I mean, we have compiled lists and we have put it together and told that. Means it's almost like telling.
It's also a stupidity to find other ways of justifying these words. You know, it's true or false. We always try to say that, you know, actually Swami meant like this. And these are the calculations. It only shows that we're not ready to accept things as Swami wants it to be.
We have a need to have an explanation
right
for every act that he does. And I think that is where automatically, you know, you can see if at all you have a need to check, a need to verify, a need to have an explanation, it is so contrary to having faith. If I have faith, I just don't need all this. Fine, this is how God wanted it and that's how it will be and I'm fine with it. I remember again, so many times I remember this, I remember it yet again, a beautiful quote that had been put up in our library in Vrindavan. It said, God has a plan for me. I mean, God has a plan and that's all I need to know. It's really as simple as that. But we just are not happy with simple, right?
But you know, having said all that, it's not only us who keep slipping every now and then. And I think as we have reiterated it so many times, that slip is needed every now and then, you know, so that we can pull up ourselves and reassess. Like somebody once said, that the difference between a Mahatma and an ordinary man, it's not that you falter and he doesn't. It's just that a Mahatma is a person who identifies his fault every time he falters.
Yes. Another quotation I remember at this point is, success lies not in never falling, but in rising back every time you fall.
Right. Now, just talking about all that, one of the most famous examples of surrender that Swami often gives is that of Lakshmana. And almost every time when Swami gives this episode, you know, describes this episode which I'm going to narrate now, I'm reminded of the other episode which happens And I say, Swami, why don't you narrate that also? Because it shows you in poor light. You know, when Swami says in Ramakatha Rasvaini, that part is there, where Lakshmana is asked to put up a hut in Panchavati, I think, you know, when Rama, Sita and Lakshmana are banished to the forest, they go to the Panchavati forest. And there Rama calls Lakshmana and says, just choose a place which you feel is suitable and put up a hut where we all can stay. And Lakshmana starts crying. He said, what sin have I done to hear these words from you? Both Rama and Sita are surprised. You know, what has Rama told that you are so offended? And then Lakshmana says that, you think that I have a will of my own. You think I have a desire and wish of my own. You're saying, choose a place according to your liking. So he says, Rama, whatever you say is what I want. There's nothing like I desire something separate from your wills and, you know, wishes. So then Rama says that, how lucky I am to have a brother like you. And then Rama chooses a place. So Swami often narrates this incident.
Yes, I have heard it many times, yes.
But, you know, and of course there's another incident also which Swami narrates. When Vibhishana comes to join the camp of Rama, you know, Rama looks at all the people gathered there and asks each of them their opinion. Swami says that, you know, Rama comes up as an ideal leader, where he says he takes the consensus of all the people around to take a decision. You know, he looks at Sugriva, and Sugriva says, no, no, you should never trust a man who's come from the enemy camp. In fact, Sugriva says, he has betrayed his own brother. How can we trust him? And then Rama says, Sugriva, what have you done? Okay, and then he looks at Jambavan and asks him, and Jambavan gives an answer. He looks at Hanuman and asks him. Hanuman says that, I've met Vibhishana in Lanka. He's a very pious man. I think we can trust him. And he turns to Lakshmana. And Lakshmana says that, Rama, what are you asking me? Whatever you choose is the right. Whatever you choose to do, I stand by it. And again, Swami says that, see, Lakshmana chose like this.
No wonder that
no even opinion of his own.
In fact, Swami also narrates that when Lakshmana falls unconscious in the battlefield, he says that Rama laments, saying that, oh Lakshmana, if I can get a mother like Kausalya, I can get a wife like Sita, but to get a brother like Lakshmana is simply impossible. I mean, that is the kind of position and pedestal that Lakshmana is placed on.
Right. And can you imagine the same Lakshmana who had this kind of indistinguishable character? He did not have any, did not want any
will of his own.
Will of his own. When Lanka has been conquered, Ravana is killed. At that point where, you know, Rama is about to enthrone Vibhishana as the king of Lanka and return, Lakshmana says that Lanka is such a beautiful city, you know, Swarnabhumi. It's a land of gold. Why don't we rule here? Why don't we rule as, shift our kingdom to, you know, Lanka? That's what Lakshmana suggests. And then the famous quote where Rama says that, Janani Janmabhumischa Swargadapi Nagari, you see.
Yeah, when Swami narrates the story, all the focus is on the Janani Janmabhumischa, right. That is, mother and motherland are greater than heaven itself.
Heaven itself. But to think of it, the same Lakshmana who, you know, started crying when asked to choose a spot to build a hut on, here was giving the suggestion that, why don't we stay back here?
Why don't we take over this kingdom?
Why don't we take over this kingdom? And, you know, let Ayodhya be ruled by Bharata. I think everybody has the moment where you slip to know that little bit of flaw, where Swami says, you know, even in chemistry we see that it's more difficult to purify that which is 99%. The purification from 99% to 99.5% is much more difficult than the purification from 80 to 85% to 80 to 90%.
Correct. In fact, 0 to 50% takes place in a trice, so quickly, so easily.
You just have to, you know, when you talk about solvents, you just need to distill it. That's the simplest procedure in chemistry. But to get from that 99 to 99.5 and every progressive 0.1% is more difficult. And I think that's what happens with these devotees. That one little flaw which they have, God creates situations where they fall, what we see as a fall, but for them is, you know, a situation to identify that there's a flaw.
So in fact, if we feel that, you know, in His standards, God is being very stringent with us and very strict, while all around people are getting away scot-free with far greater mistakes, I think then that's a point to rejoice, because one way of looking at it is, it is for purifying me more and more that it is happening. And each person is undergoing his own purification process. My business is to mind my own purification and take care of it.
In fact, you know, there's a very famous theory, being a school student, I think you would know. Shailesh's clean slate theory.
Exactly, yes. You know, which says that on a slate, on which there are a lot of scribbling already, one more speck of chalk will not make much of a difference. But on a slate that is very clean, one speck of chalk dust will be seen very clearly. So also, you know, they say that when you had a fine, perfect, virtuous life, even one flaw on that will be seen, and therefore it will be even immediately punished. But on the other hand, if you have life filled with flaws, one extra flaw will not make any difference to the overall scorecard there. So it will be just put there. But you have to pay for it sometime, but it may not be seen immediately.
Right.
So, you know, this was taught to us that if at all you see that a smallest mistake that you made is also being immediately punished, rejoice, because maybe your slate is clean. Well, again, it's such a delicate line to tread, because though it should give us satisfaction and joy that the slate is clean, it should not lead to ego. That will result in dirtying the slate all over again in a trice. So it has to be ego free. At the same time, it should not depress. You were speaking about Ramayana, and you know, I was reminded of one more episode, but maybe we'll take that episode after this break.
Yes, a short song break. At the end of it, we'll come back to this discussion and maybe wind it up.
वाह छुड़ाए जात हो निबल जान के मो हृदय से जब जाओ तो सबल में जानू तो हे गिरिधर सबके संबल मोकुले संभा हरि मैं नहीं तुम नैना हरि मैं नहीं तुम नैना निर्बल के बल दीन के बंधो निर्बल के बल दीन के बंधो वचन सुन के बैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना थामूं गरिया जान डगरिया ले चालो मोहे जानो तुम्हारे शरण में तुम्हारे शरण में अब मेरो ठोर ठिकानो गोपाल गोपाल अपने पतित को बैगे उबारो अपने पतित को बैगी उबारो नाम रटो दिन रैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना दर्शन से सुख बिन दर्शन दुख प्रभु मेरो मन वापावे तुम देखे मेरो सूरज उगे तुम बिछड़े छुप जावे गोपाल गोपाल हरि तुम ही आंधे की लकुटिया हरि तुम ही आंधे की लकुटिया तुम ही जिया को बैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हरि मैं नैनहीन तुम नैना हे गिरिधर गोपाल श्यामा दीन दयाल भक्त वत्सल सबके संबल मुकुले संभाल गोपाल 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 गोपाल.
Yes, listeners, welcome back. We are in the afternoon satsang and we are talking about the topic, the difference between knowing faith and having faith. But before we go on, we have a very interesting and happy announcement to make. July 15th, the Radio Sai Telugu stream will be completing 2 years of service to Swami. And to commemorate that very, very happy moment, we are having a day-long live session from our studios in Radio Sai, and that will happen on 14th of July, that is this Sunday. So starting at 6 in the morning till 10 in the night, we will have the various Radio Sai volunteers from different districts like Vishakhapatnam, Tirupati, Hyderabad, and even students from the Prashanthi Nilayam campus and the Anantapur campus coming and participating in this program. So if you follow the language Telugu, do tune in to Radio Sai Telugu stream on Sunday, the 14th of July, and enjoy the day-long live broadcast to mark the second anniversary of the Telugu stream. So yes, Arvind, let's continue with this discussion which is so engrossing.
Well, I think if we, you know, continue to give examples of either personal examples or examples of people who are known to be stalwarts in faith, but who actually faltered when it came to having faith at some instances, I think we can find any number of examples. But in order to move this discussion towards a conclusion, I think we should see how, you know, this aspect of having faith is so subtle, because even after having this whole discussion and even hearing these examples, we may still feel that, you know, when it comes to faith, I'm fine. I'll give you one small example, that a personal example. You know, always, you know, in the last 3-4 years, when Swami used to give darshan, he used to give it on the wheelchair. When Swami comes on the wheelchair, sometimes I would notice that after the lady's side, the boy who is pushing Swami's chair simply turns Swami towards the interview room and takes him off there. Or some days, you know, Swami would come late for darshan. I'm saying late because, well, in terms of, we all often think that Swami will come by, say, 4 o'clock or 4:30 or 5 o'clock. Sometimes he comes at 6, 6:15 or 6:30. So that is what I mean by saying Swami comes late. Swami is never late. It's we who are off in our timing. So on such days, I would think that, oh God, Swami, we have sat here for so long waiting for you. At least give one full the round darshan. And it would look like as if Swami wants to go around one full round in the hall. But last minute, after the lady said, the boy pushing, apparently in a hurry because it's got late now in the evening and Swami should receive aarti soon, he just cuts. And I used to feel, what is this? What is, I mean, in my mind, I used to harbor some kind of anger against those boys, you know, thinking, why are you turning Swami away from his devotees? Swami wants to come to the devotees want Swami, why are you becoming like that? In fact, there are many such stories, if I can say. In fact, somebody used to say that the term volunteer means wall and tear, where the volunteer becomes like a wall in between the Lord and the devotee and brings tears in the devotee's eyes. So all this, I also, you know, subscribe to this and think, yeah, this is like that, and this is what I used to think. One day I had a dream. It seemed like an ordinary dream, but the profundity hit me late when I woke up in the morning and noted it down. In the dream, Swami was being taken on the wheelchair back to Yajur Mandir, his residence. And at the Yajur Mandir, the students who are in charge of taking him there, they leave Swami's wheelchair at Yajur Mandir, because from then on, somebody else's duty it is to take over, and they leave. And in the dream, I am again angry on them. I am thinking, what is this? They are not, how can they leave Swami alone like this and go off? Don't they want to take care of Swami? And so I go and sit beside Swami, thinking that, you know, till somebody comes and receives Swami from inside Yajur Mandir, let me be here. And then as I am sitting, Swami looks at me and tells, what? And I tell him, Swami, I will wait, Swami. I will wait till you go in. Then in the dream, the realization that I get is that those students who have left also is because Swami wanted them to leave. Mm-hmm. It is not that they had some kind of hurry and they didn't want to be with Swami or anything like that. So a student coming to Swami, and Swami wanted me to get the chance of sitting next to him. So you see, a student coming to Swami is also his will. A student leaving Swami there in my dream and going away is also Swami's will. There's nothing to be credited to the student to me there in the dream for sitting next to Swami. And nothing to be criticized in those students who left Swami because they did not leave actually, you know. So this is one profound truth that hits me. And as I'm sitting there, I see that under Swami's right hand on the wheelchair, there's some kind of a joystick.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that and tell Swami, wow, I did not know that your wheelchair had this joystick. Then Swami looks at me and says, see. And he moves the joystick to the left and he says, see. And the wheelchair moves to the left. He moves the joystick to the right and says, see. And then the wheelchair moves to the right. Then I'm surprised in the dream and I say, wow, Swami, your wheelchair has a joystick. I did not know that. And then these words, Prem, I think we should etch it in our heart. Swami says, nobody knows. Everybody thinks that the boys behind are pushing and taking me wherever they want. I am actually controlling. I take them where I want. They just follow me. You know, this was an answer to what I had been thinking about them turning away Swami and doing as they will. In spite of knowing that it is the Lord's will that always comes true and everything that is happening is His will, theoretically I am very firm in this belief and conviction. But when it comes to practicality, how I falter? Day-to-day life. I mean, we would never have thought that me thinking that, oh God, why did you turn Swami away? I want Swami to come here. Is actually rooted in my lack of conviction that everything that happens is because of His will. That is how subtle faith is, or the lack of faith is. I mean, so to get absolute faith, one has to become one with the divine. If we see like this in our day-to-day life, there are so many instances where we will be able to find out that we are apparently violating what Swami has said and thinking that we are firm in our faith.
Exactly. You know, this very incident that you narrated where Swami is saying that I have the control in my hands, it's again coming back to that point where the, you know, the horizon of our faith has to slowly expand to engulf every aspect of our life.
Hmm.
You know, when Swami was walking, if Swami took a letter or did not take a letter, it was Swami took the letter, Swami did not take the letter. But from the light of the understanding which you gave us now, whether anybody took the letter or not who was around Swami, it was Swami willing to take it or not.
Hmm.
So now you have to look at Swami as Swami and the boys around Him and the people around Him.
Correct.
But the fact is, nothing can happen to you in your life if Swami has not willed that for you. You know, I cannot come up to you and verbally abuse you if that was not part of Swami's plan for your day to day. So that should actually remove all kind of hatred towards anybody. All kind of favoritism, you know, towards one person which you do not show towards another person. Because whatever comes to you, good or bad, in a day is what God has planned for you for that day. So which means if we say that I have complete faith in Swami, I'm sure that shows what we are right now and where we should actually be.
Another lovely point that you made, Prem, that we should not feel hatred towards anybody who speaks anything if our faith is 100%, because this is what Swami is giving. It also brings up the fact that I do not feel attached or affectionate in the sense, get attached to anybody else also, because usually why do I get attached? Because I feel, oh, this person has so much feeling for me, this person has so much concern for me. Now you realize that that feeling and concern is also Swami's plan. So whatever happens throughout the day, it reminds me only of Swami, makes me remember Swami, and that is what it is supposed to do.
In fact, you know, there's that beautiful bhajan which says, I'm not getting the first lines of bhajan, but the line goes, that tum bina prem koi nahi dene wale. Once somebody was telling, actually it is not that nobody else loves me other than you. He said, whoever loves me is actually giving me your love.
Exactly. This is what we discussed, Prem, you know, another satsang when we spoke about the tap and water analogy.
Absolutely.
We seek water. I mean, we seek love. But what happens is we get attached to the tap that is giving us water. That is where the problem comes. Because if the tap runs dry, we start thinking that we are loveless. We have not lost anything because water is available in abundance everywhere. We just seek that water because the water comes from the single source, that is the Lord. All the love in the universe comes only from the Lord. Today I may be getting it from you, tomorrow I may get it from somebody else. Let us not lose the love because we are attached to the object of love.
And that's what faith can do. In fact, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj, one of the great Advaitic seers we have seen in the recent history.
I remember even one Swami had spoken about him, calling him the Bidiwala and said that.
In fact, you know, people ask Swami, Swami, you talk about realization and being one with God. In this modern world, is there anybody who has reached such a state? And that time Swami said, yeah, he's there, that Bombay Bidiwala. Bidi Panwala, that's what Swami said. And after that, people realized that there is somebody like Nisargadatta Maharaj in Bombay who was actually an owner of a pan shop and who had a family and who actually was a realized soul. So when people would go and ask him, Maharaj, how did you realize? How did you attain the final realization, which is so difficult to attain? He would just say one answer. He said, my guru told me that I'm God and I believed him. You know, as innocent as that and as profound as that.
But is it as simple as that?
You know, that's what faith is. Because he said, I believed my guru. I had full faith when he told me that you are God.
It reminds me of one more anecdote, a story, not an anecdote. A quite famous story. You know, it is said that there was a region that did not have rains from many years. And therefore, they decided that they would hold a mass prayer and pray to the Lord for the rains. And so everybody was told to get an object of faith, which they could hold, whether it's a cross or a statue of Lord Ganesha, whatever you like. Something that you would like to trust and have with you on that day. And on that day, as everybody prayed, it suddenly began to rain. And everybody was getting wet, you know, it was a downpour. Suddenly, amidst all that crowd came one little umbrella, which a little girl was holding. And then she said, you know, when we are all going to pray, God is going to give us rain, definitely. And therefore, I brought this umbrella along as my object of faith because I trust the umbrella to keep me dry. And you know, that I feel is really the real great faith. You know, every one of us is praying for rain, but faith is such that you know that it will happen. If we know that it will happen, why don't we get along an umbrella?
You know, that's the thing. When I was reading a book a few days back, where it was saying that when you attain realization or oneness with God, practically what does it appear like? Okay, you've got the final understanding. In practical terms, when you see a person, how does that person, you know, appear to you? So he just said the easiest identifiable quality is fearlessness. And in fact, if we have complete faith, 100% faith, it should reflect in us as fearlessness. Because nothing unpleasant can ever happen to me. Or nothing which God gives to me can be unpleasant.
Either way you look at it, it's perfect.
Right. So fearlessness is actually nothing but 100% faith.
And that is the greatest gift that we can get from God. And that is why, you know, when Swami used to raise his hand, we used to call it Abhaya Hasta.
Abhaya Hasta.
A hasta, a hand which gives Abhaya or fearlessness. And we see, I mean, all the gods that we can think of, starting from Ganesha to Swami to Jesus to Buddha, everybody have their hands in that Abhaya pose. It is as if, you know, it is a strong indicator and inspiration for all of us that you have to attain fearlessness. That is an indicator for ourselves to judge on how complete our faith is.
And that's why Swami said, Swami always used to say, be happy, because if you have no fear, you will always be happy. The anxiety is completely deleted from your consciousness.
Isn't it interesting, Prem, how everything seems to be connected? You know, faith is connected to love, which is connected to non-attachment, which is connected to overcoming vices, which is connected to moksha.
Surrender. Realization and jnana to prema.
Somehow you start on any topic and we speak about everything. I don't know whether, you know, we are simply totally messed up in the head or whatever, but it so looks like everything is so well connected and everything is the same. Everything is one, we feel. You know, we thought we'll be talking about faith and we ended up talking about surrender. We started talking about love. I'm sure if we start talking about purity also, we'll get in all these topics together.
I think that's the paradox of Swami and spirituality. Like one of our lecturers used to say, Swami had this padyam, vetikto nanu, I'm searching for a true devotee. and I'm still yet to find one.
Hmm.
No, Swami used to say, like, you all have found a God, but I have not found my devotee.
Huh.
That's what Swami used to say. And one of our lecturers used to say that this is a paradox.
Hmm.
Because Swami will never find a true devotee.
Okay.
He would say that Swami starts a discourse by saying, Divyatva Swarupalara. And if you really believe Swami 100%, the moment you hear that statement, then you should be realized.
Just like Nisargadatta Maharaj.
Right. You have to completely trust in your guru. And the moment you completely trust, then you realize you become one with God. So you're no more a devotee separate from, you know, a devotee who is worshipping God. So he says that Swami will never find that 100% devotee having 100% faith.
It's just like saying that nobody can ever find 100% happiness. Because the cause for happiness and sorrow coming together is a dual world. And the only way, as we discussed in our previous satsang, the only way to overcome sorrow is to get beyond this duality into the Advaitic, Atmic reality. And once you get to that level, what happiness are you searching for? Whom are you talking about? So, yes, these kind of paradoxes are there to thrill the intellect, but they are also there to inspire our soul. And as the clock comes closer to 2 p.m. in our studios, dear listeners, we hope that you enjoyed this satsang as much as we enjoyed being a part of it. All your thoughts, suggestions, feedback are most welcome. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. And for those of our listeners who are well-versed or comfortable in understanding and speaking Telugu, here's another reminder. Don't forget to tune in the whole day on Sunday when you will be treated to a audio feast by our various Radio Sai team members and volunteers, with programs coming live throughout the day as part of the second anniversary celebrations of the Telugu stream.
So that, dear listeners, brings us to the end of this afternoon satsang. We heartfully thank you for joining us, and we thank Swami for giving us this opportunity. We're going to leave you with a song, and the other side of the song, as usual, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with the segment Love to Love. Till we meet you again next week, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is
Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and we sign off with the name of our Lord on our lips and in our heart.
Vithala Narayana, Vithala Narayana, Narayana Hari Narayana. Hare Narayana.
तुम हो
बुद्ध
अंतर्जोराष्ट्र महावीर तुम हो,
अंतर्जोराष्ट्र महावीर तुम हो,
बुद्ध जोराष्ट्र महावीर तुम हो,
अंतर्जोराष्ट्र महावीर तुम हो,
सबका
एक राधा एक मीरा दोनों ने श्याम को चाहा, अंतर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो, एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी, एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी, एक राधा एक मीरा दोनों ने श्याम को चाहा, अंतर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो, अंतर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो, एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी, एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी, मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन में पाया, राधा ने मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन में पाया, राधा जिसे खो बैठे वो गोविंद मेरा हाथ बिछाए एक रानी एक दासी दोनों हरि प्रेम की प्यासी अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीत में बोलो अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीत में बोलो सूरत लुभानी एक मूरत लुभानी एक सूरत लुभानी एक मूरत लुभानी एक राधा एक मीरा मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर नागर राधा के मनमोहन सागम पधा पधम पर मगर दर्शन करे रे गम गम पम पध पध सनि परे आ प्रभु गिरिधर नागर राधा के मनमोहन राधा नित श्रृंगार करे और मीरा बन गई जोगन एक मुरली एक पायल एक पगली एक घायल अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीति में बोलो अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीति में बोलो एक जी